Welcome, everyone, to the Woken English Podcast. This is your host, Gabriel Aguero. Joining me today, Facundo from Miami, Florida. How you doing, Facundo?
Hey, Ray. How you doing? I'm doing great. How are you?
Good to hear your voice, buddy. Good to hear your voice. Francisco Arde joining me from Buenos Aires. How you doing, Fran?
Hey, Gabe. Hello, Facu. Hello, everyone around the globe. How are you guys?
I'm doing well, my friend. I'm doing well. We're here to talk about the big talking point, the big aspect that's been circulating in the Boca universe, per se, regarding Carlos Tevez's contract and all of that. And then we're going to get into a little bit of transfer information. There's not much, but a couple of players that are on my list that I just want to mention real quick. So to kick things off, I think the best way to go about everything is to talk about it chronologically, as we were talking about, guys, before I started recording. So where do I start? El Patron Bermudez, pretty much. He is, I don't know if I would say vice president of football operations. I don't think they distinguish those titles. Obviously, the president would be Riquelme, but as part of the football department, El Patron Bermudez is part of that, and they deal with negotiations with current players, scouting players abroad, and whatnot. We all know how a footballing department works. So in an interview, and it's important to say that this interview was not live. He went on an interview with Deza Sports. It was recorded, and then it was played on later in the day. El Patron Bermudez basically said that when we arrived, that Carlos Tevez was an ex-player. And of course, that generated a lot of media attention, press attention. It was the headline absolutely everywhere. I don't know if you guys were able to listen to the audio. I heard it. And if you continue listening, what he actually meant to say, and he obviously used very poor choices of words and sentence structure, but what he meant to say was when we arrived, Carlos Tevez was labeled as an ex-player. He was seen as an ex-player by not only fans, but the media, and including myself. Many times in this podcast, many, many times, I've said that Carlos Tevez should be playing the final 20 to 30 minutes of a match. It's where he makes the absolute difference in a football game. And I've said that many times in 2019. But the truth of the matter is that since Miguel Angel Russo arrived, Carlos Tevez has been a completely different player. And that was what El Patron Bermudez was sort of insinuating. But of course, like I said before, the headline everywhere was Carlos Tevez was an ex-football player. And this was last week, no? I don't know, Francisco. Was it 2 weeks ago or was it last week? I think it was last Monday.
Last Monday or Tuesday. What Bermudez spoke?
Yes. Yeah, when he spoke with Deza Sports. I think it was last week, no?
Yeah, after... Yeah, then Tevez spoke on Friday, I think, and he tried to cool things down, but it didn't happen. But basically, Bermudez, we have to, if you allow me, I would like to introduce him for some people who may not know who he is. He was the captain, and he was the defense leader in Boca towards the end of the 90s and the early 2000s, winning two Copa Libertadores in 2000 and 2001. He earned himself the respect of all football in Boca, being a leader, being the I think there is a word named chieftain or something like that, the caudillo in Spanish. Mm-hmm. That's the kind of leader he was, and that earned him a spot in the club, working in the position he has now. His opinions were always very, very considered, alongside Mauricio Serna and Oscar Córdoba, those his two countrymen who are not working at the club, but they were idolized alongside him in the same period. So Colombia always had a very particular feeling with Boca. Mm-hmm. I think Bermudez is still using that respect he earned, pretending that with that he can say whatever he wants.
Yeah,
and I think that's in some point it's wrong. Of course, he has been a legend in the club, one of the best five defenders ever in Boca, but it doesn't allow him, and it doesn't give him the right to speak however he wants. Mm-hmm. When you are playing a role in a club, and you are part of the club of the staff, you should measure yourself. I am not saying that if he doesn't if he has problems with Tevez, it's okay. Don't go out and say, yeah, we are, he's my best friend, and don't fake. It's okay. But you must filter yourself and try to put a sort of a custom on behind your words and try to make them look different. That's something that he mistaked. With all due respect to him, because again, he's a legend in the club, and I'm just a guy in a podcast. I think it's part of the respect here I have to keep for him being a journalist also. But that's something that it's impossible that goes well when you speak about a guy like Tevez, who is an all new idol we have in the club. It is right. He was right saying that Tevez was nearly an ex-player in 2019. And despite Tevez didn't like to be treated like that, he tried to cool things down when he spoke on Friday midday.
Yeah, so let me go ahead and get into that. Of course, the consequences following Bermudez's words with Deza Sports were, you know, it was a major headline on Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday morning, Tevez finally spoke. And I heard the interview on the radio. I believe you guys did as well. And I think for the most part, Tevez spoke appropriately. He said that, you know, he didn't like how Bermudez said what he said, that things should be spoken behind closed doors, not on a microphone in front of the entire world, which I agree with. And surprisingly, because the debate is mostly about Carlos Tevez's contract, Tevez went ahead and said that he accepted the club's offer to renew for 6 months. And whatever wages he earns, 100% of his wages, he'll donate to a nonprofit organization fighting coronavirus, COVID-19, which absolutely surprised me. It surprised everybody, I believe, because the days prior, a lot of the media was saying that there was a feud between Tevez and the club regarding his contract, the length and the salary. They couldn't come to terms on the salary. And I think, you know, that really doesn't even matter anymore if he's going to donate whatever wages he gets. He doesn't need the money. He's simply in the club to play football and win titles. I want to get Facundo's thoughts, though, before I continue with more of the situation. Go ahead, Facundo.
One of the things that, you know, Fran already said, you know, he explained how Bermudez was back in the day as a player. But also, you remember the last 8 years when Angelisi was in power, Bermudez was one of the biggest critics of the administration. He was always tweeting, always speaking his mind, always criticizing the administration, the team, the players, this and that. So I think that once he came into the role in the club, or he picked up a role, he needs to measure himself a little bit more. More when, you know, Tevez is still an employee. He cannot forget that. Like, if my employer is talking shit about me, I'm probably going to come out and, you know, cover my ass as well, you know, say something about it. However, you know, like, we always know Boca sells a lot. And the fact that he said about the ex-player, we all understood what he meant. If you actually listen to the conversation, we all knew that Tevez was an ex-player. I mean, with Guillermo for the last 2 years, he didn't play well. Then with Alfaro, he barely played. So he was an ex-player. We all knew that. Like, if we would ask any of us in February if we thought that Tevez was going to come back and win the title for us, absolutely no one would say yes. No one would trust him because Tevez was not playing well. Yeah. I still think he got better. Obviously, I don't think he was like super important, but he scored a lot of goals and he actually made an impact in the last 7-8 games. So I think that Bermudez, since he was criticizing the previous administration for the last 4 or 5 years, he probably meant to, like, you know, to show who has the longest penis, if you want to put it that way, and kind of like say, hey, you know, we brought him back. Like, you wasted his talent for the last 3 years. So I think he was being political when it comes to that. He was just trying to compare himself to the previous administration, how they brought him back. Like you said, wrong choice of words. You know, you cannot tell somebody that you thought he was an ex-player and now he's good. Doesn't seem good. Tevez did okay when he came out on Friday to talk about it. He was very civil. He didn't want to fight. He avoided all the bad or the questions that the journalists were like trying to get him more juice to, you know, or fuel to start the fire. So I was really proud of how Tevez talked to the press on Friday. Usually he's not very good at it. So this time he was very good. So points for him and not many points for Bermudez. Again, you are in power now. We expect you to be better when you talk to the press. We expect you to protect your players, something that you've been criticizing for the last 4 years. It's like, I'm looking back and it's like, oh, we're back at the same shit. You know, people talking to the press. Also think that we're bored. All of us are bored. It's not football. I really don't understand what's the problem with the contract. Tevez says that he wants 6 months.
It's bizarre. Yeah.
1 year. It makes no sense to me because we're not going to play in the next 6 months.
Yeah.
So it makes sense that the club wants a year, meaning like till June of next year. I don't understand how the contract's going to go, but I think it's just unnecessary situation right now in the middle of pandemic when no one talks about anything else.
Yeah.
You're just giving them something to talk about just to, you know, kill, and I quote, our vibe, how they say here in the US.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're better than this. But you also know that everything that comes out of Boca's mouth players is going to just be huge, whatever it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think you touched on some pretty good points, Facundo. In the middle of a pandemic when there's barely anything to talk about, especially football on the pitch, other than whatever goes on in Europe, we're giving the media it on a silver platter, topics and headlines to discuss throughout their shows. And for those who aren't aware, sports shows in Argentina, they're based on sensationalism. They don't really discuss statistics and this and that. It's a lot about arguing, fighting, who screams the loudest. It's pretty bizarre to watch, and it's pretty interesting. It's completely the opposite of, you know, sports shows here in the U.S., at least the football-based one, the soccer-based shows. There's a lot of sensationalism going around. So continuing... Go ahead, Fran. Go ahead.
Let me add something. What Facu said about the long beep, it's part of Argentinian culture. When you discuss it, you try to show you are braver than the one in front.
Mm-hmm.
And what you said about we are only giving headlines to the media, there is another phrase in Argentinian culture, which is in Spanish, it's dar de comer a la gilada, which means to feed the gilada. The gilada is the group of irrelevant people who are not as important,
but they are
a lot of people
who
hate. Yeah, haters. You are feeding that media who is starving for headlines and starving for just things to discuss about.
For viewers.
You are feeding that.
Yeah.
You are feeding the sheet. You are feeding sheet. Sorry for the word, but you are feeding those people. Of course, they will always be there, and they will always be discussing and speaking things out of context and putting your headlines out of context and everything. But try not to feed them anymore. And that's what Boca did. They fed these people.
Mm-hmm. The last point that I want to touch on that Facundo did a great job of is El Patrón Bermúdez's conflict and issues with the previous board. And he's expressed that on a numerous occasions over the past 8 to 10 years. He never had a good relationship with our previous president, Angelisi, or with that entire board. He was never in agreement with their style of managing a football club. And El Patrón Bermúdez basically never had a role within the club. He was never allowed in the stadium to watch a game. He never could do anything within the club because of the huge conflicts that the previous board had with El Patrón Bermúdez. So, keeping that in mind, yesterday, Sunday, Bermúdez tweeted an article basically suggesting that Tevez is trying to gain presidency of the club over the next couple of years with help of the previous board. And that ultimately made a little fire into a humongous forest fire. It was the subject of discussion everywhere on social media. Even today on major newspapers and sports shows and all of that. And El Patrón Bermúdez, once again, he tweeted again today saying that that the entire world is waiting for Boca to renew Davis's contract Sadatid's contrast, because they're symbols of the club and whatnot. But it just goes to the same point that we made before, all three of us. I think Bermudez really needs to just let go of his Twitter account, stop tweeting. If he thinks those things, to simply pick up the phone and discuss them with those players, figure out their conflicts, just talk it out. I don't know, do whatever you have to do, but just don't do it in front of everybody where the entire media could see and you're giving them, again, headlines served on a silver platter, per se. I don't know if any of you guys have anything else to add to that.
Well, one of the things, if you saw the tweet today, Bermudez was more like defending himself because he felt that Tevez was trying to add some political movement into all this press talk. I mean, Tevez said that he would like to be president. He's been saying that for the last 10, 15 years. But Bermudez should know that Tevez has all the rights in the world to compete against him in 4 years. What I would suggest for him is, like, you know that, answer him with results. Like, if in the next 3 or 4 years you do the right thing in the administration, we're going to vote for you again. Like, this is like, it turned into who's more of an idol. Like, we don't care.
Yeah,
we just want the administrations to do the right things and to win tournaments and to show us that you're going to support us no matter what, that you're going to listen to us no matter what. Yeah, right now, what Bermudez is doing is not listening to us. No one wants to be or be feeding the press, the anti-Boca press, with all this nonsense. It's absolute nonsense that you're talking about the thing. We're not going to play in 2020. The tournament is done. We're fighting for something that's not going to happen in the next 6 months. It makes no sense to me. So, you know, Bermudez has to be better. Unless there's something that we don't know, you know, maybe there are some problems that we don't know, which could happen. But just take it offline. You know, take it offline. No one needs to know about this. Not now, when there's nothing that we're fighting for.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know. I think that they're both wrong. I think that Bermudez a little bit more wrong because he's, you know, the employer, and Tevez is an employee. I know that Bermudez came out just because he felt that, you know, they were, you know, playing with him a little bit, and Tevez was like kind of fighting him or making like a conflict out of nothing. But just shut up and stay inside. it makes no sense to just come out and talk to this. I mean, everybody's tense. Or we all tense. We're living inside the house for the last 100 years. I know we're all tense. That we're all having mental problems because we don't know how to deal with the situation. Just shut up, watch some Netflix, and continue your life until football is back.
Keep calm and watch all matches.
Correct.
Yeah.
You know, enjoy. Like today or yesterday was like the anniversary for the 2001 tournament, the back-to-back tournament that Boca won. Tevez was the captain. Bermudez was the captain for that.
That was his last match.
Enjoy the moment. Like, enjoy. They were celebrating these tournaments in the past because clearly there's nothing we can talk about right now.
So, in fact, Bermudez scored the winning penalty in 2000, and he missed, which would have been the winning penalty in 2001 against Cruz Azul in Mexico. I was sitting right next to that goal on one of the boxes with my father. He could have scored two winning penalties in two final match shootouts in two consecutive years. Man, that was mental.
Yeah, I mean, it's the last back-to-back team that did it. And you are the main spot because you are the captain. You are lifting the trophy. That was yesterday, I think. 19 years. Just enjoy the moment. Why are you coming out and fighting about something that, again, we're not going to have football for the next 6 months. We're not going to have football for the next 6 months. Stay in your lane.
Are you sure?
100%.
Yeah,
I only think that what can happen with the Copa Libertadores. That's my only concern. I don't know what can happen. That's why, in a normal world, without any pandemic, I think that can just for 6 months. So when he finishes the Copa Libertadores, and then he will say, okay, my career is over. He's going to turn 37 years old in next February. So yeah, it's pretty much a moment to leave football. I'm not saying that he has to retire, but it's a moment in which it's an age in which many, many players retire from football.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree.
And it makes sense. The 6 months makes a lot of sense, but not right now. Again, were you going to renew for 6 months and then December? How many games can you play till December? One, maybe two.
Yeah. Yeah, I think just listening to your guys' frustration, of course, I'm frustrated as well. I think the biggest thing, the closing statement, I guess we could say, is nobody is above the club. I think the club is the most important thing. We recognize our idols, the biggest players who have done brilliant things for our clubs, like Tevez, like El Patron Bermudez. They may have different ideologies and whatnot, but when you're voted into office, when you're under a contract like Tevez, or when you're voted into office like El Patron Bermudez, there's certain roles you have to fulfill. And you were put in there because the fans, the members, the club members who pay their monthly fees, they voted you in there. And they want certain decisions and they expect certain things from the board as long, you know, also with a player if you're under contract. So I think it doesn't matter how big of a player you were for the club, that doesn't give you the right to do absolutely whatever you want. The club is above anybody else, and it doesn't matter what name. The club is above Maradona. The club is above Tevez, Bermudez, Riquelme, Palermo, whoever. The club is the most important thing, and I don't think any of these legendary players for our club should act as if they're bigger than the club, because they're not, ultimately. But to sort of get into our next topic, you guys were discussing the return of football. Facundo saying that there's not going to be any football for the next 6 months. Francisco saying, are you sure? I don't think really anybody knows. The one thing I have heard, though, is that, and this I've been hearing for the past couple of weeks, is that football and the television and the contracts and all those guys, they're preparing for football in Argentina to return at the end of September. And that's local football. I don't know what kind of structure that tournament's going to have. I don't know what it consists of. But Francisco, who's actually living in Buenos Aires, he resides in Argentina, he can tell us a little bit more about the decision the government has taken to ultimately go back to phase one. They were going into phase three. Is that right, Francisco?
Yeah, we were in a sort of a phase three, not phase four yet. But when people were expecting to go to a phase four, we are now back in phase one from Wednesday, next Wednesday, July the 1st. It's Monday midday now in Argentina when we are recording this podcast. And yeah, we are having phase one from Wednesday on until July 17th. Mm-hmm. Because the early quarantine, Argentina has one of the longest quarantines in the world. It has saved lots of lives. Over 20,000 people recovered from the virus. We are having about nearly 30,000 active cases in a total of nearly 60,000 infected people. 1,200 deaths. That's until yesterday, Sunday night. But the hospital, the sanity situation will be collapsed in possibly in August. So it did save lots of lives, but you're extending this too much at the same time. Lots of people need to go to work and can't. Of course, I do support them, but lives are first. That's my personal opinion. It's not the podcast opinion. It's just a personal view. And it's really uncertain when football will be back. Because the teams must go back to training. You can see what happened in the Bundesliga. The Hertha Berlin had 10 injured players since the comeback in just a month and a half. Marcelo Gallardo, the coach of River Plate, the manager of River Plate, said that we would need at least a month of training before starting to play. I don't know, because the situation it's particularly sensitive in Buenos Aires City, which has Buenos Aires and around Buenos Aires, which has nearly a half of the teams in Superliga, because then you have teams in Córdoba, in Tucumán, in Rosario, in the province of Santa Fe, Mendoza, teams that are 800 kilometers away from Buenos Aires, or even more. Mm-hmm. So it's difficult if you come from the infected people to go to places which are nearly recovered and on their way to a normal life. That's really difficult. There is a province at the north of the country, which is Jujuy, that they had a team, Gimnasia de Jujuy, in the Superliga until 15 years ago. Their governor said, come, I open the door of my province if you guys want to bring your clubs and train here and be back playing here. And they had to go back to phase one because some people were infected. So it's very difficult to know what will happen. Not only in the medical aspect, but also the second division was stopped five rounds before the end. So they need to decide what will happen with the leaders, if there are new promotions to the Superliga, what happened with the relegations. There are lots of things to be decided. And it's very difficult to know what will happen. But my concern with football is I am pretty sure that CONMEBOL will not take care of anything and will try to resume the Copa Libertadores as soon as possible. I'm pretty sure that no matter what happens with the Superliga.
Yeah, I think CONMEBOL have adopted, they came out with a protocol to resume training, and AFA as well. Is that the case, Fran?
Yeah, I think it will be. However, there is something else. I don't know what is it like in many countries in South America, but Argentina's borders are completely closed. So until you have your 10 countries with their borders open, there is no way to fly. You can't fly from Argentina to Peru, to Colombia, to Venezuela, to Brazil, to wherever it is, to be back playing if your country's borders are closed. So that's something else to be seen about.
Think about it. Yeah, because CONMEBOL said that they're not going to open the competition again until all 10 countries are playing again. So basically, they said if there's one country that is not safe or they don't have a plan, we're not going to play. And don't forget, South America is a new epicenter. I mean, with Brazil taking over all the cases they have, I don't think any player...
Yeah, right now, Brazil is possibly the most sensitive country in the world with the pandemic.
Yeah, it's a new epicenter. So and they're playing would you tell any? I mean, would you tell any player to go to Brazil to play? No. Will you risk bringing all the Brazilian teams to a different country? No. It's not about coming and going. It's just like you're going to keep doing this and people are going to get infected. And I don't know. If I was a player, I would not trust anybody, to be honest. Even if they bring it to another province in Argentina and play like a mini tournament, there's not enough test centers. There's not enough. It's not just the players. It's a lot of people behind each team, each roster, medical staff. Don't forget, it's bus drivers. We don't take planes in Argentina, so bus drivers. So they're going to have to deal with stopping in different states, provinces, sorry. And this and that is not as easy as in a first world country like in the US.
Yeah, you know what, guys? I had a couple of people I know. They are from San Juan at the center north of Argentina. They were in United States on holidays when these things or in a work and travel program. And when this all started, it took over 2 months for them to be back in the country and to go back to their home. It was difficult to get flights. It was difficult to get even to be. I think their families had to drive over 1,000 kilometers to Buenos Aires to pick them up and be back in their province to then start the quarantine. It's really, really difficult. However, I have the feeling that CONMEBOL will do whatever they need to be playing again. So I don't know what will happen. That's what I am not so sure that we have no news until the end of the year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it definitely is a very strange situation. I know certain countries are playing their local league again. They've announced return dates in July. I think I'm not 100% sure, but I think Paraguay is playing football. Brazil is obviously still playing without fans, of course, but they're still playing. Mm-hmm. They never really stopped.
Yeah, Chile wanted to start again. However, but now Latin America is the epicenter, as Facu said, it's the epicenter of the pandemic. Brazil is in serious trouble. Peru is in serious trouble also. So there are lots of sensitive points in all South America.
Yeah, I think considering the Copa Libertadores and obviously keeping in mind that football is not the most... When we're discussing this, our listeners need to be aware that we're discussing this because this is a football podcast. But the most important thing to us, to everybody who does this podcast and integrates this podcast, is health. Health first, obviously. But when you start talking about the football aspect, countries are going to get underway in different times. Argentina might be at a huge disadvantage. Let's say, for example, Paraguay gets underway. Boca has a crucial game. Their next Copa Libertadores game is against Libertad in Paraguay. Obviously, there's no fans, of course. There won't be any fans, but you know, you have to take a trip out there. And it'll be definitely a difficult match, especially if the Paraguayan teams get underway before the Argentine team. So, you know, lots of coaches like Gallardo, who was mentioned before in this podcast, they're taking a look at these things, and they don't want to be at a disadvantage. I think that depending on the player, their body type, their age, and all that, I think a lot of players might need more than a month to get acclimated to everything again. I think on average, it should be from 4 to 7 weeks to get adapted into this whole thing. That's why a couple of players, a couple of coaches in Argentina are adamant about returning to training. If you're going to let people run outside in Buenos Aires, what's the issue with players returning to training in groups, separated in groups of five per se?
We're going back to phase one.
This is it. Yeah, we are going back in phase one in Buenos Aires, with half of the clubs. But for example, Godoy Cruz in Mendoza province, Mendoza is a province that could overcome very easily. I mean, they could control it. They are nearly in the border with Chile in the west. A beautiful province, by the way. If you ever come to Argentina, you must go there. But it's not the same to discuss about what happens in Buenos Aires rather than the rest of the country. Yeah. Atlético Tucumán could easily be back on training. They are 1,000 kilometers away. Central Córdoba in Santiago del Estero also 1,000 kilometers away.
Talking point, though, it goes back to the whole disadvantage talking point.
Yeah,
I'm not saying however, I agree or don't disagree. Go ahead.
Yeah, however, if Boca belonged to there, 1,000 kilometers away of the epicenter, we would be also trying and pushing for be back in training. So I understand what they mean. I can understand them.
Yeah. I think Talleres is president. Talleres is a team from Córdoba. He's been pretty vocal about resuming training. And of course, all these teams in all these different provinces outside of Argentina, where they have pretty much maintained a certain, they have pretty much, they have a grasp of coronavirus. They want to get back to training. Buenos Aires, when talking about Argentina and it's all of the infected, Buenos Aires is the main talking point, because that's where most of the clubs are and that's where most of the infected population is.
And all the teams are in Buenos Aires as well.
Yeah, majority of the teams are in Buenos Aires.
If you think about it, if you have 15 teams, that's about like 500 people traveling. What are you going to do? I mean, where are you going to go? And then the Copa Libertadores, Brazil is number 2 in the world with more cases. Peru is number 6. Chile is number 7 of the world.
Yeah, and we are talking about Peru and Chile are countries with less than, they have less than 30 million people. So it's a very severe situation to be, because I understand that United States is the leading, but they have 7, 8, 9 times more population than countries like Peru and Chile, for example. So it's a very, very serious thing. Now that you mentioned the clubs, I'm reading the stands. I have the 24 teams that participate in the Superliga in the last season. Boca from Buenos Aires. River Plate, Buenos Aires. Vélez is from Buenos Aires City. Racing is a suburb in Avellaneda. Argentinos Juniors is inside Buenos Aires. Defensa y Justicia is a suburb. Same for Lanús. San Lorenzo is inside the city. The top 8 teams are from Buenos Aires or suburbs of Buenos Aires. 9th and 10th place, Rosario Central and Newell's, the Rosario neighbors, the Rosario Derby, 2,000, nearly 300 kilometers away from Buenos Aires. Arsenal is a suburb of Buenos Aires, Sarandí. Talleres is in Córdoba, 800 kilometers away. Estudiantes are barely out of Buenos Aires suburb area, 80 kilometers at the south. Independiente is a suburb, is part of the Avellaneda, suburb of Buenos Aires, same as Racing Club. Atlético Tucumán is 1,000 kilometers away. Unión from Santa Fe is 500 kilometers away. Banfield is inside the metropolitan area of Buenos Aires at the south as well. Central Córdoba is 1,000 kilometers away, but Gimnasia is from La Plata, again, same as Estudiantes. Patronato is in Entre Ríos, 500 kilometers away. Huracán is inside the city of Buenos Aires. Aldo Civi is in Mar del Plata, 400 kilometers to the south, a very quite safe city. Then Colón is in Santa Fe, 500 kilometers, and Godoy Cruz is in Mendoza, at the west border of the country. I think that I read more than half of the teams in Buenos Aires or the suburbs, which is the sensitive area and this, the area that is under phase one.
Yeah, so pretty much everybody looks for the best interest of their own clubs. So the teams outside.
I need to breathe after reading.
The teams outside of Buenos Aires obviously want to get back to training. The teams in Buenos Aires want to hold off a little bit. Nobody wants to get advantage. Everybody wants to get an advantage over the other team. That's how Argentine football is.
Gabi, like,
go ahead, Paco.
It's been 100 days since this started in Argentina. And Buenos Aires is back, phase one. It's already July. Imagine it takes us 30 more days to go back to phase two. That's mm-hmm. already August.
Yeah.
People are going to start training again. Gallardo said that they need 1 or 2 months. That's September, October. When are they going to play? November, December? Like, it makes no sense to me, to be honest.
Yeah, it's a difficult situation.
I don't think any player is going to be like, oh, yeah, let's play. We don't have the logistics to make it happen, like in the U.S. I mean, maybe next podcast we can bring in Nico Cantor, or he can send us a message and tell us how it's going on with the MLS and explain to us how it works. Mm-hmm. I think that would be fascinating. But, you know, we've been listening to Nico and we've been following him, and it's completely different. The way they're doing it here and the way they're doing it in Europe, they have the logistics, they have the travel, they have the test centers, they can do it. Mm-hmm. I mean, Nico's getting tested every day. Do you think that they're going to have every single player tested every single day?
In Argentina, absolutely not. And the clubs have to pay for their testing, and there's a lot of conflict.
Right. So if you're being very, very, you know, straightforward with the facts, I don't think we're going to play anytime soon unless the government says, screw you guys, get infected.
Yeah, I think apart from the testing itself, logistically, Boca and River are probably the only teams who could get back to training. Logistically, Boca has also the whole training facility in Ezeiza with, I think, 10 pitches, 8 to 10 football pitches. So realistically, Boca can separate into groups of fives and train that way. Realistically, they can do it. Every player drives from their house. Already dressed in their clothing, arrives in training, practices in groups of fives, and then leaves, does not change at the facility. They leave, and they go back to their house, and then they shower and change and do all of that.
Anyway, yeah, Gabe, anyway, there is a problem. Some people want to return all the divisions together. And from the third division down in Argentina, there are even amateur players that have to take public transport, which is now strictly reserved to essential workers like healthcare and some other disciplines that are considered essential. But if not, they can't take the public transport. And not everybody have cars. Some of them live in poor places, and that's really difficult to do. If you have to bring all the leagues, all the divisions leagues, all together back. The Football Federation was supposed to be taking care of the testing, so they could be funding them all together. But I think they will try that all the divisions come back together.
Yeah, that looks like that's going to be the way it unfolds over the next couple of weeks. To sort of get into the last little segment of the podcast really, really quick, I'm just going to review the latest in player transfers. So Mauricio Isla, who has been in ongoing negotiations with Boca, Valencia, and Real Betis from Spain are also interested in his services. We're going to see what's going to happen with that. Ricardo Centurion, he belongs to Racing. He played last season on loan to Vélez. Vélez want to keep his services. Cassini, another part of Boca's football department, said that Ricardo Centurion is within Boca's plans, but he's not priority. So we have to see what happens again. Bruneta, the young player who plays for Godoy Cruz, who spent 3 years...
Let me stand up for Bruneta.
You're a huge fan of his. Yes, he spent 3 years in Boca's youth academy.
Guys, I actually literally did stand up from my chair. I did.
So Runeta confirmed on one of Boca's most famous radio talk shows that Boca did inquire about his services with Godoy Cruz and his agent, but it didn't progress further than that. Again, we'll see what's going to happen. Now, players within the club renegotiating or negotiating a contract extension. We mentioned Davis before. The club wants 1 year. Davis wants 6 months. From what I've read from Tato Aguilera yesterday is that the club will offer him the one-year contract with the possibility of resigning after the 6 month mark. So everybody happy. Saturday, Boca went ahead and submitted a contract, an offer to him. It's for a year. That's about it. That's all we know. We don't know wages or anything like that, so we have to wait for him to respond. Franco Soldano is the last player on my list. Boca would have to pay $5 million to purchase him from Olympiacos from Greece, who own his rights. Otherwise, the Greek club wanted Boca to pay a fee in order to attain another loan for the player.
What's your thought on that? Will you pay $5 million for Soldano? Think about it. $5 million?
Under these conditions, no. I would extend the loan for another year. I would do everything possible to extend the loan for another year.
Yeah.
That's my personal take.
$5 million is not much.
No, yeah, I know, but that's a number that was set before everything happened. Facundo.
Yeah, exactly. No. In that moment, it even seemed to be. I remember I said when Soldano arrived, if Soldano plays well enough to be bought by the club, $5 million will be a cheap price to buy.
Yeah,
him.
I think it's a fair price. But with everything going on, there's no football.
It's what Boca paid for Dario Benedetto when they signed him in 2016. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So if we had to pay a low price for a loan, for the first loan, and he does well enough, then he will be a great business.
Yeah. I mean, that...
do you talk about Bentancur and how we saw him to Juventus?
No, I didn't. What's the situation with him? That Boca owned 50% of his rights, Juventus owns the remaining 50%, and Juventus is paying Boca, what is it, $2 million a year?
For 8 years, I think, something like that.
For a total of 8 years, yeah. One of the most bizarre transfers I've ever heard in my life.
Yeah, I think we're losing with inflation and all that and everything that's happening every year with the market. I think we're losing. I mean, it's a lot of money. Obviously, he became, I think, the most expensive player that we ever sold. But I think we're losing. I don't think it's a good move. But yeah, again, I mean, it's 2 million euros coming in every year. I'll take it, but I still think that, you know, if they would have sold him to another club, we wouldn't take 50%. Imagine they sell him for 50 million. We would have taken 25. I don't know.
Yeah. I think somewhere in there, Boca should have forced Juventus at a certain point to purchase the remaining 50%. But the club obviously didn't do that. This is a transfer that happened when? Back in 2015? 2014, around
probably.
There?
Yeah.
I forget. I don't know when we sold Bentancur. But that's it on my list. I don't know if you guys have any closing statements before we go ahead and close this episode out.
Nothing else from my side.
Nope. I just hope that we come back to playing soon because I'm very bored.
I can tell by your voice. I think we all want football back. I mean, I don't know about you guys, but I sit here and I watch football from Spain, Germany, England, and I just want to see Boca above everybody else. But it looks like we're gonna have to wait and probably quite a while. Anyways, Facundo, thank you so much for joining me. Francisco, to you as well. To our listeners, thank you for tuning in. We hope everybody stays safe, and until next time.